We're taking you behind the scenes with entrepreneurs that run product-based businesses. There is so much information out there tailored towards service providers, so we have carved out a space just for you. The creative entrepreneurs making and selling physical goods. We're firm believers that everyone has a story to share, and there is so much we can learn from each other's business journey. Whether you are just starting out or a seasoned business owner, this podcast will shed light on new strategies, inspiration, and action steps to help you grow your product-based business. Hey friends, I'm your host, Katie Hunt, and welcome back to Proof to Product. Have you ever looked at bigger brands or even household names and thought, what are those product-based businesses doing that I could implement in my own business? Well, today's guest is Maureen Wonge, a brand growth strategist behind some of America's most beloved brands. We're talking L'Oreal, Chobani, Dove, and Lay's. She is the creator of the Big Brand Academy, the Product Profit Lab, and Startward Consulting, a consulting firm dedicated to teaching product-based entrepreneurs the sales and marketing strategies that they need to scale with scientific precision. She wants you to turn your products into household names. Maureen's zone of genius is her rare ability to connect with a market and turn real data into brand growth strategies that drive multi-million dollar growth. Her nonprofit organization, Taji Foundation, supports boys in Kenya to get the education they need to lift their families out of poverty and build generational wealth. On today's episode, Maureen shares how big brands are humanizing their marketing, and we talk about data points that all of us should be paying attention to versus the ones that we can ignore. And spoiler alert here, she wants us to stop paying attention to the numbers of followers that we have on social media. Now, before we jump in, I wanted to share this quick note I received from Kate Woolley of the Noble Papery. She says, "I am so proud and thankful to be a part of Proof to Product Labs. Honestly, I was hesitant to join at first and thought that I would try it for a year. 5-ish months in, and I have already seen huge growth in this business, and a lot of that can be attributed to what I learned within labs. I am not leaving anytime soon." Thank you so much, Kate, for this note. It made my day. Listeners, the doors to Proof to Product Labs are always open so that you can get the help you need when you need it most. Head to prooftoproduct.com/labs to learn more and join us for a 1-year group coaching program. Now let's dive into today's episode about using data points to scale our business with Maureen Wonge. Hi, Maureen. Welcome to Proof to Product.
Hey, Katie. How are you doing? I'm so excited to be here.
I cannot wait to dive into this with you. I'm going to nerd out on the numbers right now, and I cannot wait. So let's back up the train a little bit and introduce you to our audience. You have worked with major brands like L'Oreal, Chobani, Dove Soaps, and then Lay's even. You've also worked with smaller brands who are working their way up to becoming a household name. So tell me, what are the bigger brands doing that smaller, growing brands should be paying attention to?
Oh, the number one thing that the bigger brands are doing is they're really becoming the voice of their customer. They're understanding their customer in and out, understanding their lifestyle, understanding what motivates them, and really looking at the future trends in each space. So if it's skincare, health and wellness, and really becoming the number one in those leading trends. And the small brands are not doing that. The small brands are really focusing on year-over-year mentality, which really impacts how fast and how big they become.
Yeah, I will say, and I've been victim of this too, in terms of how what I'm teaching, but like the ideal avatar exercises that we've all done, that only gets us so far, right? Like we need to look beyond that. Mm-hmm. Now you mentioned trends. Trends are a hard thing to track or forecast. Where are bigger brands going to kind of determine what these forthcoming trends will be?
They're using their customer information. So for example, right now, if a brand is selling snacks, a lot of people are really conscious when it comes to health. So you'll hear a customer saying, "I'm really eating diet foods. I'm really eating granola bars," or really health conscious food. So they're using that information to be like, this is the future. Mm-hmm. So if I was selling something that's very unhealthy, then I need to meet my customers where they are. When it comes to like skincare products, customers are really saying that we want to use products with ingredients that we can understand. So they're looking at organic, natural, really healthy products in my skincare routine. And that gives them information that we can no longer use all the old ingredients we are using. We need to start making real and authentic products that our customers resonate with.
Well, and I think we're seeing a shift too in the market in that our customers want to know our brands. They want to know the values behind the brands. They want to know what the company stands for in addition to things like what's in the product and how will the product benefit my life and all of these things. Do you agree with that?
I agree. That's the one term the big brands use called humanizing the brand. So if you notice, it's how they're showing up on social, what they're saying, and how they're representing the entire brand. In the small space, a lot of entrepreneurs don't want to be the face of their brand, don't want to talk about their why, don't want to talk about the emotional connection. They just want to focus on the ingredient side of it, but you're missing the equation. We need to personalize our brand. We need to humanize our brand. Even if the CEO of a big brand is not showing up on Instagram, they're using humans. They have millions and dollars of budgets to pay a model to come, but it's a human being. So that means that we need to do it as well.
So. It's true. And it's free for us to put our face on social media. And I know it can be scary sometimes, but you know, there's ways to, I love what you're saying about humanizing the brand. And yes, we don't have million-dollar budgets for marketing. So we have to get creative. We have to think through things. But that humanizing factor that you talked about, that's where it's so important from both sharing who we are as a brand, as well as asking for feedback or getting to know our customers. So it's a two-way street, right?
Exactly. Exactly.
So when we scheduled you for the podcast, you shared that your superpower is turning real data into brand growth strategies to drive multi-million dollar growth. I'm reading this because it was so good and I didn't want to mess it up. But I really want to get into the data with you because I think this is a pain point for a lot of our listeners. What types of data are you tracking? And then how are you leveraging this in terms of your marketing strategies that you're rolling out with your clients?
For a small brand, the number one data I track is the product assortment.
Tell me more.
A lot of times as business owners, we have so many products that actually are not serving our business. Oftentimes they're cannibalistic. What does that mean? If you have one hero product that's been driving the vast majority of your sales in your business, then you keep adding products, you're not understanding that you're trading your customers. So if they used to buy your best seller, they come back to the second product that you launched and then you lose sales. And oftentimes when you keep adding products as a business owner, it doesn't serve you.
That is fascinating. Carry on. My mouth is open because I'm just like absorbing all this. Like what?
But as small business owners, we feel empowered or we feel really good when we have 15 products. But I can guarantee you if you have 15 products, only 5 or 6 are driving the vast majority of sales. That's the number one thing I track. Because if you limit the number of products you have, you get money back into your business because you're increasing the efficiency. So efficiency of skill from a manufacturing standpoint, from a marketing standpoint, and also from selling. Mm-hmm. The fewer products you have, the faster it is for you to scale.
Okay, so I want to dive into this a little bit from my perspective. In wholesale, we constantly need to be producing more product because buyers want to see, like the store owners want to see new. But what I'm taking from what you're saying too is people could stick to the same type of product, the same type, like what if they're making candles, for example, they could go deep in making candles and make more SKUs in candles and become known for making candles instead of trying to make candles and also make keychains and bath products and all these other things. Do you agree with that? Like, or do you think really they should be honing in more?
So let's talk about that. You talked about two things, and I'm going to talk about the growth aspect. Okay. So if you're making candles, there's probably one line of candles that sells the most. It could be the lavender flavor. But the issue is you launch vanilla, you launch strawberry, you launch chocolate, you launch all this. There's only so many flavors you can have and drive sales in your business.
Right.
So when it comes to scaling, you want to take the top 5 cents that are selling and stick with that.
Okay.
When you're going to wholesale and you're thinking about growing your brand, now you're bringing in the aspect of innovation. How do I innovate for growth?
Yeah.
It can still be a candle maker, but it goes back to understanding what else does your customer need to complement their candles.
I realized as soon as I said, I'm like, those are terrible examples for complimentary products for a candle right. company, by the way. So like, I thank you for calling me out on that, because I was like, no, we would want to have like matches and like there's other complimentary products that you could sort, you know, work into that. Yeah.
Which will not be cannibalistic. It will help the growth. Because mm-hmm. if you sell matches, you'll get a customer who's looking for matches and then they realize, oh, they actually have candles. So let me try.
Yeah.
The issue is just expanding on the same line 24/7, because it's just going to hurt the growth and the sales of your business.
It's interesting though, because, well, and I want to get back to the data points because I know there's a lot of other data points we could talk about. But like once you get the manufacturing dialed in for something like candles, since that's our example today, like it's easier to crank out more SKUs. It's easier because you've got the systems and the processes in place. And if you're depending on your market, they're wanting more SKUs. They're wanting more scents. And so it's a tricky situation. But I think too, going back to your point about the data, this is where we need to be looking at our sales data. We need to be seeing what is actually selling, what is not selling. One thing I talk about when we talk about discontinuing product is seeing, does this still fit with the rest of the products I'm offering? Is it selling well? You know, there's all these things that we need to take into consideration. And okay, so that's, oh, go ahead.
And also, just to say, also the big brands have many SKUs, but they do a very good job every year to review if all the SKUs need to be in their portfolio. As mm-hmm. small businesses, we don't do that. So we need to be ruthless in looking at our numbers and being like, vanilla scent didn't sell in 2021, so I'd need to get rid of it and find something else.
Yes.
The issue is we keep the products for so long, we hold on to that product, and then 5 years down the line, you realize I have so many SKUs that I cannot even manage the growth of my business.
Yeah. Oh, I totally agree. Okay. So what other data points should people be looking at? And also, I want to, can we dig a little further? Are there things that people should be looking at in the earlier phase of their business versus once they're more of a seasoned entrepreneur? Like, does that change?
Yes, in the earlier stages of business, I really tell people to look at their pricing. Oftentimes, pricing strategies when people are starting businesses tend to be completely off, and mm-hmm. more likely than not, they're not profitable. And that's yep. when they're not able to run a profitable business, and then the businesses collapse. And the biggest issue that happens when people are starting businesses when it comes to pricing is a mindset issue. Oh my God, I don't think my people can pay $50. And I'm like, you have to realize, this is the one thing I say when you're starting a business, you have to realize you're building a brand. Branding is why people buy you. Marketing is how people find you. And as a brand, you have to sell the value. So you're pricing the value. You're not pricing the product.
Yes. Say it again for the people that need to hear it again.
You are pricing the value of the product. You're not actually pricing the actual product.
Yes.
When you do that, you start building a profitable business, because value-based pricing is this magic formula that would let you build profits. And profits is what puts your product on shelf.
That was so succinct. And I'm like over here clapping in the background. That was fantastic. When it comes to scaling a product-based business, one of the biggest mistakes I see people make is that they spread themselves too thin. They're trying to sell retail in their online shop. Maybe they're doing retail craft shows. They're dabbling in wholesale. Maybe they're picking up custom jobs on the side and trying out licensing. But when you do all of these different things or a combination of them, you're spreading yourself too thin. Because each of these sales channels require different sales strategies, marketing strategies, and you're catering to a different audience. It's a different customer. So the first thing I want to tell you to do is stop spreading yourself too thin. Instead, build systematically. Do one thing, get it going really well, and then add another sales channel. And two, if you're considering whether wholesale is the right next step for your business, I invite you to join me for my free masterclass. It's called Is Wholesale Right for You? And it's available at proofToProduct.com/wholesale class. This is on demand. You can watch it anytime, and it's about 30 minutes long. And during this training, I'm going to run you through concrete things that you need to have ready before you start wholesaling. Again, sign up at proofToProduct.com/wholesale class. I look forward to seeing you there. Okay, so pricing is definitely a hurdle at the beginning phase, and we need to be looking at that. We need to be looking at, so just to recap, value-based pricing is what we need to be considering. I hear so often exactly what you said. My customer won't pay this, or I feel badly charging this price. And I do teach running your numbers from your production costs up to kind of get to your pricing and also looking at what the market will bear. You do need to do those responsible things, but you also need to have the mindset of I am providing value with this product and I am bringing joy to someone's life. I am making their lives easier. The benefits, the values, all of those things tie into your pricing, but they're not something you can put into like a pricing calculator, so to speak, right?
No, you cannot.
I wish we could, but we cannot. So, okay, let's talk about seasoned business owners, people that have been in business a while, let's say like 7 to 10 years. They've had growth. It may not have been as fast as they'd like or, you know, as much as they'd like. What kind of data points should they be looking at to really get them over that hump for like faster growth and larger growth?
For them, the first one I talked about, products assortment, assessing if everything you have is needed in your business. The second thing is marketing. Mm-hmm. Like really at that point, at that stage in business, some of them have over invested in Facebook ads. Do you want to continue building your business on Facebook ads? Or is this an opportunity for you to expand distribution? A lot of times people think that it's marketing that will make you the big person, but actually the number one thing that helps businesses grow is being available at distribution, being in many places so that people can find you. Mm-hmm. So as in, do you have room to either do wholesale, to even get into boutiques or even get into retail?
Yep.
Right? Because that will make you a household name, trust me.
Yes, it will. Yep. It will. Okay, so product mix and then distribution are the data points. Let's talk about the marketing data points though. Like what specific data are you tracking? And then how are you leveraging that for change? Like what do you do? So we collect the data, that's one thing, right? Mm-hmm. But what do we do with it? How do we use that to make positive changes in our business?
So the first thing, if you're running paid ads, you want to, a lot of times people focus on return on ad spend, ROAS, but I do recommend looking at return on ad spend in addition to return on money invested.
Okay.
Because some brands will have like 5x return on ad spend, but if you look at a true financial P&L, you actually realize I'm not actually breaking even. So should I go and look at return on money invested and be like, for the amount of money I'm putting in, am I getting an equivalent return on that?
So can you explain that a little bit more? That does the return on money invested also include your production costs of creating
yes,
a product,
exactly.
your labor, your exactly. like all the pieces?
All the pieces that get you to create the physical product.
Okay. So our production costs in addition to the ad spend, then deciding if we're, yeah, because you're right. Actually, ROAS would just show us what we paid in advertising and what the response was to that, but it doesn't talk about our overall.
Yeah. And that totally impacts the full P&L and the financial health of your business when it comes to scaling.
Yeah. Okay. Mm-hmm. You were going to say something else and I interrupted you again.
Second thing is, as you're a seasoned business, you have different marketing channels. So you either have paid, you have email, you have text, you have so many things that you're doing. Really look at the ROI of each of those channels. If you're doing text and you're not getting any return, why are you doing it? Maybe it's just email and maybe ads if that's what you're doing. Yeah. The thing is, we don't need to be everywhere and we don't need to do everything when it comes to scaling. We need to pick one or two things and do them really well so that you can scale. Scaling comes with scientific precision, which means picking one or two things you do very well and really honing it on that, then come in and add innovation strategies that help you become bigger from a business standpoint.
I love what you're saying about focusing on things that you're already doing well, leaning into that further and giving it more attention. I have been guilty of the trying to be in all places at once, or just even my curiosity led me to go explore other things. You know, I played with TikTok this summer and had fun with that for a little bit, but it wasn't something I leaned into very long. I've been on Clubhouse a little bit and I've met a lot of great people and that has benefited my business. I will say some of these things feel difficult to track the ROI. And so what do you say to people that are like, but I don't know how to track ROI on this? Like, are there tech tools out there? Is there like, how can we make that as simple as possible so people can truly see what the ROI is from some of these marketing activities?
Google Analytics.
Oh, You wrapped this up in two words, huh? Google Analytics. Okay.
Google Analytics. If you've embedded Google Analytics into your site, I don't remember the exact same or the exact place, but if there's a section called channels, under channels, all your marketing activities are laid down, including the conversion rate and including the amount of money it brought into your business. So clearly you can see what's driving sales. I have a client who it was just basically Facebook ads and referral.
Yeah.
Those two things drove 60% of her sales. And so she was like, so I don't need to keep doing the daily email campaigns. I don't need to keep doing the Instagram. I'm like, no, Google Analytics is showing you it was Facebook ads and referral. And that was it.
So that's where you focus.
That's
okay. I have to admit, I get in my Google Analytics as least as possible. That sentence was not grammatically correct, but I do not get into my Google Analytics very often. Yet I'm a data, like I love the data. I love digging into that stuff. I think it's a little bit intimidating for people though too. Yeah. So how do we go about, like, do you have any tools? You don't have to walk us through it right now on the podcast, but do you have any tools for helping people get set up with Google Analytics if that's something they have not already, like if they have to attach it to their text or their email or any of those things? Like, do you have any suggestions on resources for that?
Google. If you Google how to embed Google Analytics into Shopify, it literally...
Let me Google that for you. Yes. Okay. Fair enough, Maureen. totally fair. Okay.
I'm a genius at interpreting what the numbers say and what to do with that in your business.
Yes, you mm-hmm. are. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Okay. So let's talk about data that most people are probably tracking that they no longer need to track, or that maybe they shouldn't be giving as much attention to. Are there any
followers on Instagram?
What's that? I'm sorry, I missed it.
Followers on Instagram.
Yeah. So yeah, like number of followers doesn't necessarily translate to sales, right? Mm-hmm. So, you know, people talk about vanity metrics as a buzzword, I feel like, but what are some of those things that are vanity metrics? Like, what are people looking at and paying attention to that maybe they shouldn't spend time on?
How many likes they get on a post, how many followers they're getting, how many followers and unsubscribing, both on social and email, just all the wrong things. And then also, I want to say this because a lot of people don't talk about it, the sales they're making when they run a promotion.
Okay, extra, keep going on that. Tell me more about it.
So oftentimes, a lot of product-based entrepreneurs, especially when they're starting, they really discount heavily. So yeah. They make sales, they'll do a 4-day weekend promotional sale, and it's consistent in their business. They get very excited because they've made money, but actually they've not made any profit. Mm-hmm. Second, they've brought in price conscious customers who will never buy their product when it's at full price. So when they put their product at full price and sell it to the exact same customers, they don't buy.
Right.
But you got excited with the 500 that you made, but the 500 was not profitable, so you didn't even break even. And then you got 500 customers that are not your ideal customers. So basically you're tracking the wrong thing.
Yeah. And then it's in your brain telling you, well, we had a big weekend of sales, we should do this again. But then that creates this vicious cycle, so to speak, of not profitable, not the right audience, constantly discounting. We're teaching our customers to only purchase from us when there's a discount available or free shipping or something like that. Yeah, you're absolutely right. However, a lot of the big brands you work with, they're constantly discounting and running sales and stuff.
Yes.
I know they have different budgets and different, but you're saying mm-hmm. that they're looking, the sales they're offering, they know that those rates are still profitable for them and they're still making money on it.
And chances are high, there's a reason why they're doing. So sometimes some of the products are coming up to the expiry date, so they have to make sure that they sell them out. Other yeah. times, if it was a seasonal promotion, they have to make sure that the products are sold. And then also, this is one thing that happens with the big brands. They do have businesses that run on promotions, and then they have a side of a business that doesn't run on promotion. So it balances the mix.
Yeah, the P&L at the end of the month.
As small businesses, we don't have that.
Yeah. Well, and I will say too, that's where when I'm working with my clients, having them have multiple, as they grow and as they get certain things dialed in where they have a good flow and good amount of sales coming, that's when it's good for them to add another revenue stream if they can swing it.
Exactly. Yeah. So I call it premiumizing your brand, just the same way we have gold, silver, and bronze, have products that follow that same pattern. Like you have a mainstream one that you're okay running promotions, You have a premium one that you're not going to run promotions because this is a premium side of your business. And then you have a bronze one that's in between that could be like your seasonal collection.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So every collection should have a role to play in your business.
This is fascinating because I think a lot of just hearing the way you talk about it, it's from much more of a technical, analytical mindset, which I love. And I feel like a lot of my listeners, they're creative, they're artists, they really enjoy the expression, you know, the expressing themselves through their products. But this side of things, analytical side, it scares them.
Yeah. Yes.
And so how do we reconcile this? How do we like what are like three things that are small things they can do to start to see the power of the data and the analytics? You know what I mean? Like how can they start to integrate this stuff in a way that starts to feel comfortable to them and they can see how it impacts their decisions?
I would say the number one thing is changing the perception that data and analytics is hard or it will constrict their creativeness. As a matter of fact, it will expand their creativeness because they can think of something that can be a breakthrough innovation and move their brand forward.
Yeah.
That's number one. Number two, I would also say embrace that you're building a business. And I say entrepreneurship is math. Like it's not complicated. You just need to look at what has worked in the past and how can I amplify and duplicate those efforts. Data is what's going to help you scale. And it's very simple. It's really simple.
When you break it down like that, it is simple. But I know that when we're in it, when we're making all the decisions, when we're, especially for small businesses that listen to this show, like many of them are one person businesses. So they're doing the creating, they're doing the fulfillment, they're making decisions about where to spend their money. They're doing the marketing and they're wearing all of the hats.
Mm-hmm.
And so what I like about what you're saying is that the data gives them permission to push into the things that are working and it gives them clarity on what's working. But the data also gives them permission to not pay attention to the things that aren't working.
Exactly. It empowers you. It empowers you to be the empowered CEO.
Yeah. I will also say too, like we're recording this in March of 2021. It's been a full year with the pandemic. People are having severe decision fatigue.
Mm-hmm.
I laugh out of a like place of, oh my gosh, I'm so tired from the, you know, but severe decision fatigue, right? At home, in our business, all of this. And what I like about what you're saying and talking about is this gives us options.
Yeah.
Looking at the data gives you options.
Yes.
And it gives you a roadmap, I guess.
Exactly.
Too.
Exactly. But you won't see that until you change the mindset from this is so hard to my business deserves this. I'm doing this for my business.
Yeah.
And also just being open-minded. Being open-minded, be coachable. I usually say be coachable because as product-based business owners, we're really attached to our businesses and our products like our babies.
Yes.
And so that sometimes can get into the way of you growing or you scaling. And for you to see the results, you have to be coachable and open-minded and know that all these tools and resources around you are to help you grow, not to constrict you.
I think too, your point about our business being our baby, I think we have a lot of personal, a lot of my clients, they've created products out of a personal need that they had in their own life.
Mm-hmm.
And so there is a much stronger attachment to that than someone that's like, oh, I came up with this idea. Just, you know, I think we do need to strip away a little bit of the emotion that's tied to that. I mean, that emotion comes from an amazing place for creativity and creating the product. But when it comes to the decisions and wearing our CEO hat, we do need to strip away a little bit of the emotion. And I will say that too, from a place of, I've had conversations about discounting product and some people want to discount things that are still selling well, but they're just tired of seeing it. And that's an emotional charge too. Like follow the data.
Yes.
So, well, what is next for you? Like you have been doing a lot of amazing things within your business. How are you working with people that want to get more information? What kind of programs do you have available? Tell us what you're working on for this year.
So I do have two programs that I created. The first one is called the Product Profit Lab. So this is for female entrepreneurs who are making less than 100,000 and they're looking for a system and an infrastructure for them to scale. So in this program, we cover how to build a brand. So how do you build community even when you're just starting off? How do you price your product so that you can price for profit? And then we also really talk about simple marketing strategies that will get you to your first 8K month. It's really the foundational program. And then I created an ascension program called the Big Brand Academy, where we teach the systems to scale and the systems to become a household name.
And I assume that second program is for more seasoned entrepreneurs?
Yes, for seasoned, making at least 500,000 in annual revenue. Because we're going deep into marketing, financial health, how to innovate for growth. So really all the data stuff that it needs to be talked about in the product space.
Oh, yeah. Yes. All of it needs to be answered. Mm-hmm. Awesome. Well, where can people find you online if they want to follow you on social or check out these programs?
You can follow me in my amazing Facebook group. It's called Product Entrepreneurs Who Scale. So you'll be prompted to answer 3 questions and we'll accept you into the community where I do weekly teachings there for free. If you want to learn more about our programs, you can go to www.startwardconsulting.com, which is StartWardConsulting.com, and you can find more about us there.
We will include links to that in the show notes so people can easily find it. Your free Facebook group sounds amazing too. And the fact that you do trainings in there every week is so generous of you with your time. So thank you for sharing that with our audience. Maureen, I really enjoyed this conversation. It was fun to talk about the numbers. It was fun to hear your perspective, having worked with these much larger brands and seeing all of the lessons that we can extrapolate from that and bring back down to, not bring down, that sounds like we're less than, we're not, but we run our businesses differently. And we have different capabilities and budgets and teams and all of the things. So what can we pull from those experiences you shared and implement in our own? So thank you for your generosity today and for sharing with us.
Thank you for having me on this show. I'm so excited to share this.
Thank you. All right, friends, I know that it's scary to look at your data. I know some of you are listening to this going, I don't know that I want to do that. But sometimes we don't even know what type of data points to track or even how to use that information that we've been collecting to make changes in our business. So your first step is to make sure that your Google Analytics is set up to track all of the different marketing and sales channels that you work within. And you can definitely Google that to figure out how to do it. Then each month, make a point to check in on the data. I want you to look at 2 key points just to start, and we can dive deeper into this and expand this further. But for right now, I want you to look at where your traffic, where your website visitors are coming from. So what's driving the most visitors to your website? The second thing is which of these traffic centers are driving the most sales. So knowing where your traffic is coming from and also which of these marketing efforts are leading to actual sales, that will tell you where to spend more of your time, energy, your effort, your marketing dollars, right? These data points will also tell you where to spend less time. For example, if Instagram isn't bringing people onto your site or converting them to customers, you can cut back on the amount of posts that you're doing every week and the time that you're spending on Instagram, right? Because if it's not leading to sales, we don't necessarily want to be spending hours and hours scrolling and scrolling. I hope today's episode was helpful for you. Be sure to join Maureen's free Facebook group. Her weekly training sounds so helpful, and her experience with larger brands is a huge asset to smaller brands, even if we don't have large teams or huge marketing budgets. Data points are something that I really want to dive deeper into in our Proof to Product Labs program. I want to talk about how to set things up, but more so how to use these data points to make smarter, stronger decisions in our business because we're looking to scale, right? So I'm going to find a way to slate this in soon. If you want to join us for that conversation, head over to proofToProduct.com/labs and join my 12-month group coaching program. We talk about a wide range of operational topics in there. We have a lot of things about marketing strategy, finance. We talk about revenue streams. We even have a section on wellness and creativity and how to avoid burnout. So if you're looking for a support system, if you want group coaching from me and you want to connect with other product-based business owners, head over to proofToProduct.com/labs and join us. We'd love to have you. All right, guys, thank you so much for listening. I will be back next week with a new episode. Thanks so much for spending time with us today. Head on over to prooftoproduct.com to join the conversation, access our show notes, and discover free resources to help you build your product-based business. We'll be back next week with a new episode. Thanks again.